Off the coast of East Africa, four Somali pirates continue to hold an American captain hostage. Yesterday, the pirates boarded and seized a cargo ship, the Maersk Alabama. But before they got aboard, the U.S. crew disabled the ship. Exactly what happened next isn't clear, but the pirates took a lifeboat, one of the ship's lifeboats, and left. But along the way, they took the captain, Richard Phillips, along as a hostage. Apparently, the lifeboat is out of gas and drifting. The cargo ship has reportedly left to resume its voyage to Kenya, and a U.S. Navy destroyer is on the scene to try to secure the release of Captain Phillips. The Pentagon and the White House are following the situation closely. Last year, according to the International Maritime Bureau, more than 150 ships were attacked off the coast of Somalia and in the Gulf of Aden. A few months ago, retired Navy Commander John Patch wrote a piece for Proceedings, the magazine of the U.S. Naval Institute, called The Overstated Threat, where he argued that piracy is overhyped and confused with terrorism. If you have questions about the best way to deal with Somali pirates, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Retired Navy Commander John Patch, now a professor at the U.S. Army War College. And nice to have him today here with us in Studio 3A. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
My pleasure.
And does this first incident of piracy involving American sailors in an American vessel in 200 years or so change your assessment?
No, it doesn't. If you look at the numbers involved, the several hundred vessels that have been either approached or attacked in some fashion or actually seized, the very small number, only two U.S.-flagged incidents. There was the Seabourn Spirit in 2005, a U.S.-flagged cruise ship, which have successfully evaded the pirates through anti-piracy preventive measures. And then there was this instance where it was actually sort of a semi-seizure. So of the percentage of incidents involving the U.S. flag, it's very, very small. So I think we have to be careful and put it in context. Is it threatening a grave national security interest of the United States? Looking at the statistics of how it affects global business, et cetera, the facts are clear. No.
And it seems, talk about David and Goliath, you have the USS Bainbridge, a destroyer, sitting next to a lifeboat with four pirates. The amount of force that is being brought to bear on this situation, the amount of military effort, seems entirely out of proportion.
Yes, and hopefully overwhelming in the eyes of the Somalis as well, so it'll be quickly resolved. My sense is they are seriously under the gun, and they realize it. They probably figured that out as soon as they realized the crew was American. They may not have seen the American flag or appreciated the concept of what it means to have an American flag on a vessel until too late, and they probably want to just get out of there and get home.
There are some of your former colleagues who are saying, look, this situation is not resolved at sea, but ashore. If you have a problem with pirates, do what the U.S. Marines did with the Barbary pirates. Send the Marines.
Many people are advocating that, and certainly military effort could be involved with accomplishing that. However, inland operations in Somalia, very problematic, as we've seen in the past. Several U.N. missions with mixed success and potential failures as well. Black Hawk Down syndrome. Conducting operations ashore in Somalia, very fraught with possible problems for the U.S. foreign policy issues, for world opinion. What if there's 100 Somalis killed in the process, most of them civilians and children? So you have to be very careful and approach it, I think, in the fashion that the current administration is looking at it. From what I can see from the press, they're looking at a multinational, prudent, slow effort using all the elements of national power, not just military.
And in fact, you argue in your piece that this is not a military problem. This is a criminal problem.
It is. And in fact, that's one reason why I argue the U.S. Navy warship with the guns and missiles is not really appropriate to the problem. The problem starts in Somali territorial waters and, of course, on land, as you've suggested. So we need an effective police force, first on land, and second, a Coast Guard that can effectively police their waters and prevent the issue from spilling into international. Because until it goes over 12 nautical miles, it's not piracy. It's criminal activity. Problem is, of course, Somalia has no such government that's viable, a very small, non-viable government, and no police force whatsoever. But who's going to write the check to create one? That's another problem in and of itself.
And indeed, some of these most recent incidents have taken place considerably further offshore after, well, large numbers of naval vessels from around the world started to conduct patrolling operations in the Gulf of Aden.
And I would argue that that is an example, that an evidence that shows the current anti-piracy efforts by regional military, U.S. Naval Forces Central Command, that are warning ships to stay several hundred miles off the coast. Those efforts are working, because if they have to go 300 miles out to get a target, that means there are not targets closer to shore. So the efforts to remove the low-hanging fruit from the pirates' grasp have, I think, effectively worked.
There are some fishing vessels that have reportedly been taken over by some of these pirate organizations that are being used as motherships to launch the high-speed small craft which overtake freighters in these open waters.
Yeah, that is a problem, too, because how do you identify whether it's actually a legitimate fishing vessel with a civilian crew, perhaps even significant issues if you have a foreign flag that you don't necessarily want to tangle with? Most of those fishing vessels are Asian flagged. Most of them are fishing illegally within Somalia's 200-mile exclusive economic zone because there's no regulation of it. You don't need to pay anybody any fees to go fish in their waters. So it's a real problem. The Indian Navy opened fire on one of those fishing vessels and sank it some months ago. And there are some allegations in the media that perhaps civilians were killed in that process and maybe there wasn't even pirates on board. So you can see where a U.S. Navy ship have to be very careful on identifying a threat before using force.
And the other thing is that the you would think maritime law on piracy, which is, of course, stretches back centuries, would be pretty clear-cut.
It is. However, some of the problems are that not everyone adheres to the UN law of the sea, UNCLOS. In fact, the U.S. has not ratified the treaty. That is one problem when we try to have that moral ground in a common framework of understanding even the definition of piracy itself, which is out of UNCLOS, the 1982 treaty. We haven't ratified it, so we have trouble justifying our position with other nations. However, I think that the last policy I saw from December 2008 has the clear effort to engage internationally to make sure that regime of international law that supports the rule of law is moved forward. And I see signs that that's happening.
Now let's see if we get some callers in on the conversation. Again, our guest is retired Commander John Patch, a U.S. Navy, now a professor at the U.S. Army War College and the author of a piece in Proceedings magazine called The Overstated Threat. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Paul is on the line from Kansas City.
Yeah, I think we're missing the boat, pardon the pun, on lessons of history on this piracy. In the Second World War, and I think in the First World War also, the British had Q ships, the Germans had commerce raiders disguised as freighters. And say a German submarine approached, looked like a freighter, down would come the camouflage, out would come the guns. I think if they stuck a few Q ship-like freighters in the Somali area, you'd first of all have somebody, if they try to approach the boat and demand the boat would be boarded, that's evidence of piracy. Out come the guns, have cameras on board, filming the whole thing, and then blow the pirates out of the water and take them prisoner, but that might take care of the problem.
If I remember my history correctly, Paul, more effective in the First World War than in the Second when it was quickly abandoned. But anyway, what's your opinion, Paul, John Patch?
Well, I'm no lawyer, full disclosure, but the Q ship is a tactic that has worked very well in the past. That's usually under very strict issues of war. A terrorist is one thing, and a foreign adversary state trying to conduct commerce raiding, et cetera, is one thing. A criminal on the high seas is another. The rules of engagement for the U.S. Navy and, frankly, any force are very different on how you handle criminal activity than how you handle legal war, or the war on terrorism. War on terrorism and legal war, conventional war, the ability to open fire easily without any permission from anybody is very clear, and it's there. Not the case with piracy. You can seize and detain pirates committing acts on the open seas, but there is no clear rules of engagement to open fire and kill before asking the questions.
You know, I think we need some clear rules of engagement, but it still seems like at least to arm the ships that are being attacked to have some kind of defense on board would make a lot of sense these days, and at least in that area. It's not everywhere in the world, but hopefully it doesn't spread. Thanks a lot.
Well, thanks very much for the call, Paul. And one of the things you do mention in your article is that companies like Blackwater and some of the other private security agencies are making forces available if companies do want to put armed forces on their ships.
Yes, but those forces are very expensive to maintain and pay and equip, et cetera. So, businesses are looking at a bottom line, and when it's too expensive, they won't do it. Also, very risky to start arming private citizen on merchant vessels, mainly because if you get into a shootout, you could have dead crew members, dead adversaries, damaged cargo, damaged ship. liabilities, fines, fees. It's too risky, too dangerous. They would rather just put the hands in the air and write the ransom check.
One of the things that we tend to overlook in this, pirates, we have this image of, well, not only the swashbuckling buccaneer, but also ruthless pirates. This is a situation where these pirates aren't behaving much more like businessmen. They're doing criminal activity, no doubt about that. But nevertheless, very few, if any, people have been hurt.
Yeah, all accounts show that they're very, very reluctant to use force. They want the check. And they'll get on the satellite phone and talk to the company and say, hey, we're not going to harm your crew unless, you know, if we get the check, it's no problem. They're not butting people's heads with Kalashnikovs. They're not killing people and throwing them over the side. The only time you really have, that I've noted, there's been significant violence is when the members of the ship try to repel the borders or use force. You may recall a few years ago, a North Korean merchant ship was boarded by pirates, and there was essentially a shootout with several pirates killed.
We're talking with Commander John Patch, U.S. Navy, retired, a professor at the U.S. Army War College, the author of The Overstated Threat, which was published in the Proceedings magazine in December 2008, with us here in Studio 3A. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email from Tony. I'm a captain in the U.S. Merchant Marine. When studying naval law at the California Maritime Academy in 1970, we learned that the reason for the creation of the U.S. Navy was to protect the sea lanes for commercial vessels. We spend billions on the U.S. Navy. Can they no longer fulfill their original intended purpose? Is commerce less important today than it was in the 18th century, that the Navy cannot escort U.S. merchant ships in the sea lanes that are plied by pirates is unconscionable?
I would argue that the benefits of commerce, the profits of commerce and free market economy on the globe are a result of free and open sea lanes. Everybody profits from it, international companies in all countries. I think there's an equal responsibility for all countries and international organizations to pay some of the price to keep those sea lanes open. The U.S., in my humble opinion, not the U.S. government opinion, perhaps, has broken the bank trying to keep those sea lanes open. And our Navy has shrunk down to some 280 ships. We simply don't have enough assets to guard every sea lane across the globe. And when you racket stack national security interests and threats, in my assessment, piracy is extremely low on that. There is much more important things for the U.S. Navy to be doing with these high-end conventional warships than chasing a handful of bad guys on a small boat.
Are other vessels more appropriate?
Absolutely. I would argue that those are Coast Guard and law enforcement vessels. The problem is equally with the new post 9/11 security regime, the Coast Guard is overtasked and under-resourced with hulls, and they have lots of home security duties and that they have to do here at home. They support operations in the Northern Arabian Gulf and elsewhere. There just isn't enough law enforcement personnel and Coast Guard hulls to do everybody else's job for them. They're very good at it, and in the few cases where they've been involved against piracy, we've actually gotten piracies prosecuted in a Kenley court when the film was made by the Coast Guard. The law enforcement detachment took evidence, biometrics, fingerprints of the detainees. That was a good, solid case that was built against these guys, and they're in prison now. If warriors, sailors, are shooting up ships and gathering dead and detainees, much more problematic than how you prove these are actually the guys that did it and who's guilty, et cetera.
Let's get Abdi on the line. Abdi with us from Tempe, Arizona.
Yes, with your respect, I disagree with your host. None of them talked about the solution was good for my country. They only talked their own solution. If you go back 3 years ago, all these problems created by the American politics by supporting Ethiopian military to invade my country, the only thing that I want to know is where were they for the last 16 years, those people who are now campaigning, sending warships to my country, rather than they should have stopped it, those huge ships that are looting Somalian country.
Which ships are looting the Somalian country?
Yes, there are a lot of fishing boats that come to Somalia shores. And
I get your point, Abdi.
From Germany, Italy, those countries. Now the only reason that these people are doing this is to stop those people to loot our shores, take our, you know, the fish, all those kind of things.
And
none of them talked about solutions.
Okay, Abdi, we hear you. Let's get a response from Commander Patch, because this is something you wrote about. The inability of Somalia to enforce its own economic zone means that these fishing vessels from around the world, many of them from Asia, come in and fish with no...
That's right. Abdi has a point. Because there's no viable government that can secure the waters and the land, it's significantly abused by some countries. Illegal fishing in their waters, there's actually illegal dumping of toxic, sometimes horrible, low-level nuclear waste, et cetera, in their waters and on their land, fouling their territory. And no one seems to be really regulating it closely. And it comes back to the idea that Somalia is still a sovereign state with a territorial limit and a government, the transitional federal government, TFG. We have to treat them as such. They have a seat at the United Nations. And we have
and
to go,
they control about 5 square miles of
they
Somalia.
Do, and that's problematic. There's at one point, there was 3 separate governments in the 3 separate major regions, you know, Somaliland, Puntland, and the southeastern part of Somalia as well, Mogadishu. So who do you deal with? That's a problem. Why haven't we addressed it in 16 years? Well, I would argue that it hasn't come up to the focus of international attention to be threatening business or national security interests.
Well, he mentioned the Ethiopian intervention in Somalia, which was indeed with the support of the United States.
Yes, and I can't speak too much to that. I don't think it's necessarily linked to piracy. So Abdi probably has a valid perspective from his point, but until somebody is willing to stroke a check for a huge effort to essentially do some state building, reconstructing the institutions of a state, we're going to have the problem of piracy in Somalia. It's ironic that the one time piracy was subdued was when the rather extremist Islamic courts took over the region and essentially set up Sharia law. Because of that, piracy was outlawed because it was against Islam. And for a period there was no piracy. When the Ethiopians came into the region, they pushed the Islamic courts out, piracy returned. Kind of ironic.
Retired Navy Commander John Patch teaches at the U.S. Army War College at Carlisle Barracks in Pennsylvania. He joined us today in Studio 3A. You can find a link to his article about piracy called The Overstated Threat from Proceedings Magazine and an interactive map of pirate attacks in 2009 on our website at npr.org. Thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Tomorrow it's Science Friday. Ira Flatow will be here with a discussion on the Italian earthquake, and one scientist claimed that he predicted it. Plus, a NASA astronaut tells us about space gadgets, including a zero-gravity coffee mug. That's all tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. I'll be back with you on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.